That was Albatross by Fleetwood Mac. Guitarist Peter Green read Samuel Taylor Coleridge's poem Rime of the Ancient Mariner as a child, and that gave him the idea for the song, which remains one of the biggest selling rock instrumentals of all times. Now My Hairy Mai, course Sandra Kyler Ho, and in this episode of Safe and Sound, we'll be talking about albatrosses, as well as cuckoos, condors, and ospreys, all of whom have been subjects of recent worldwide studies. Birds are a favourite of mine. They're awesome and remarkable creatures. I have three of my own birds. I also feed the neighbouring birds out on my deck. I used to volunteer at a bird rescue centre, and so I've had quite a bit to do with them over the years. I know for a fact that the expression bird brain is completely inaccurate. Studies have shown that they're very intelligent. For example, they use tools, bits of stick for digging out insects out of tree stumps and that kind of thing. And even though their brains are necessarily small, physically they pack in more neurons per area than most other species. But sadly, birds all over the world are being affected by climate change and other man-made activities such as plastic in the oceans, longline fishing, land reclamation. So we'll be chatting with Marian Hassenbucks, who's the International Campaign Secretary for the Animal Interfaith Alliance. Listeners may remember that I spoke with founder and CEO Barbara Gardner about a year ago on this program. Marian is responsible for writing letters and emails to authorities about matters that concern Animal Interfaith Alliance, whether it be bullfighting in Hispanic countries, wildlife killing in the USA, live exports around the world. Whatever the issue, Marian will be lobbying the organisations. And she also takes the time to thank the authorities, which do take enlightened, compassionate decisions and make changes for animals in their countries. But before we go on to that conversation, I'd like to mention that our sponsor, Village Organics, who are opposite Frankton Hotel in Frankton here in Hamilton, stock a range of ingredients for smoothies. Lots of berries such as blueberries and raspberries, frozen bananas, and they've also got all the powders that you put into your smoothies, the kelp, the spirulina, the wheat and barley grass and so on. So go and check them out. I'm not sure if the science actually supports it, but I always feel that liquid foods, especially those that are jam-packed with nutrition such as smoothies and soups, can be, they really are extremely healthy for us because they're so easily digested and used by the body. I personally have a lot of soup, even in summer, and I've decided to try more smoothies too.
Deals.
Well, that was part of an English folk song, The Cuckoo, sung by Kalia Kalon. And I think it was your sponsoring of a cuckoo by the name of Chris that got your interest in bird studies sparked. Is that right, Marion?
Yes, it is, Sandra. It was Chris the Cuckoo who started me on my interest in, basically, in migration. Hello to everybody down there in New Zealand. I'm up here in the northwest of England. The British Trust for Ornithology, very concerned about the decline in cuckoos. In fact, they have frighteningly declined, and they're not quite sure exactly why. Started tagging, catching up some cuckoos, first of all in East Anglia, and then later on in the rest of the country, and tagging them, and then following, monitoring their migration down to equatorial Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the beginning of my interest in the cuckoos, which led me on to other birds as well. So you in New Zealand have the same kind of cuckoo in that your long-tailed cuckoo is also parasitic, I understand.
Look, I really don't know. I don't know much about cuckoos in New Zealand. I'm not sure I've ever heard one here.
I think they don't sound the same as our European cuckoo, which of course is extremely evocative.
Quite poignant, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, and so this cuckoo that you followed, it was Chris, named for...
Yes. Named for Chris Packham, the conservationist and TV presenter. They tend to all get names, and sometimes people, paying a lot more money, of course, they can sponsor a cuckoo in the sense that they can name a cuckoo, but I haven't done that myself. But studies are showing something already, because there have been quite a few years of this now, and they either take two routes down to equatorial Africa, the eastern route via Italy and the Balkans, or the western via Spain, and most of them have to cross the Sahara. But strangely enough, cuckoo mortality on the western route appears to be greater in Europe.
So what would that tell them?
Well, they're thinking that various climatic changes in Europe, particularly in the Mediterranean area, are causing death of cuckoos, such as wildfire, destroying their habitat, and drought.
Those extremes of weather are a function of climate change, aren't they?
That's what they think. And they're amazingly resilient, and a great number of them get through, and it's a long distance, as you know. Are you interested in what happened to Larry this year?
Yeah.
Well, Larry is my current cuckoo, and he left the Congo Basin on April the 17th. You see, we can know exactly when these things happened. And he embarked on his Sahara crossing, moving north through central Mauritania. 2 days later, he was in central Spain.
Right.
By that time, he'd covered 1,685 miles, arriving on his breeding ground here in Britain 3 days later. It's an amazing marathon, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. Do you know about our New Zealand godwit?
I don't, no.
So our little New Zealand bar-tailed godwit flies 12,000 kilometres without stopping. Again, they've tagged individual birds. I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago that it was first done, and they followed their routes via webcam and so on. 7 or 8 days flying without stopping.
It's just mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. So what else happened to Larry?
We think of cuckoos as being archetypal British summer birds, but we've discovered that Larry, amongst the other cuckoos, spends only 6 weeks in England.
Mm.
So we really should call them African birds.
Right.
During that 6 weeks, Larry will have paired with as many females as he could attract, leaving many eggs in nests. So on the evening of the 19th of June, he left Lancashire.
Was this year?
This year,
yeah.
So he moved down to Croatia and transmitted from there. But then, very unexpectedly, the next transmission they got was from Poland. Now, the British Trust for Ornithology had never known this happened before. Larry had previously been in Italy, but then he sharply took off northeast.
Mm.
And there again, possibly because of great heat in southern Europe. So he was looking for better feeding areas.
But the scientists are not sure exactly why.
No.
No,
they're not. No. I think they must be very extremely sensitive to the stimulus. And when they feel and when they realise that it's too hot and the food is not there, their instinct is to move north where the more food will be.
Right, right.
That's my very amateur thinking.
Right, right. And where's Larry at the moment?
In Chad. He caught up on time.
Right.
And later in August he'd crossed the Sahara safely, and he's now in Chad.
He's still quite a young bird, isn't he?
I'm not quite sure how old he is. Lost track of them. I remember Chris being, I think, six when he died.
Right.
And I think that's fairly long-lived for a cuckoo.
And then you have some birds who live 50, 60 years. Now, we've got such a short time to try and skim over the surface of the studies of four different birds, and we've looked now at the cuckoo. And so tell us about the albatrosses. They're a remarkable bird as well, aren't they?
Well, you will know very well in New Zealand, because yes. You have actually the biggest species of the royal albatross. And I've been watching some ringing of the royal in Dunedin. I was following the progress of a colony of Lycaon albatrosses on the Hawaiian Islands. I don't know whether you've heard about the Kauai Albatross Network, which is part of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology BirdCam project. These are live streaming images in the season of Lycaon albatross, and they've been seen for four nesting seasons now. And what happens is that this network finds willing private owners of land on Kauai, and they make an arrangement to basically protect the birds, which, of course, they're ground nesting. So there are a lot of dangers inherent in ground nesting birds, even as big birds as albatross. Now, albatrosses, as you know, are amazingly long-lived. They can live into their 40s. Have you heard about Wisdom?
Yes, I personally have, because of the reports that you sent me. But Wisdom, well, she's nearly as old as I am, Wisdom.
She's 64 now.
Yeah. Goodness me. Yeah. And she's just had a chick.
She's had another chick. She introduces chicks year after year. She's on the Midway Atoll, National Wildlife Refuge, which I think is the biggest collection of albatross, of Lycaon albatross in the world. And she seems to be never-ending in her production of chicks. The albatrosses are amazing anyway, as you know. This Lycaon is a smaller albatross with only a wingspan of some 7 feet, but they all travel incredible distances to forage.
Yes.
Millions of square miles of the North Pacific, moving from Japan to the Bering Sea.
They mainly eat fish, don't they?
They eat squid.
Squid.
Mm. Squid is their main diet. I think they can eat other fish as well, but squid is basically, when they look at the bolus that the chicks throw up, or that the birds throw up, they find it's basically squid beaks, like an owl pellet.
So albatrosses, do they dive below to get the squid?
Yes, but I think it's fairly shallow. I think the squid are fairly high up. I don't think they dive very deep. But I'm not quite sure about that.
I was just thinking about birds and how they quite often, in fact, more than any other species, bird species often pair for life. We know that humans don't often, but birds do more often than any other species. Swans, for example. Yeah, and albatrosses. The other interesting thing about albatrosses is that they don't seem to need to rest very much, and they drink seawater.
They do, yes. Because they're tube noses, like petrels, they drink seawater, and the salt gets excreted through the tube nose at the top of the beak. I could see on the webcam, even the chicks, there were drops of salt dropping down their beaks. Now, Kaloma was one of the chicks who featured this year. She turned out to be a female, and I don't know whether this happens in New Zealand, but they've been translocating eggs, because some of the parents have been nesting near an airstrip, incredibly dangerous, to try to deter them. This sounds harsh, and it is harsh. They take the egg, and they have put them under foster parents in a safer area. Kaloma was one of these translocated eggs, and she's got two mothers, because there are a lot of female pairings in this Kauai colony.
Why would that be?
I don't know whether anybody knows why this is, but they seem to pair. Of course, they're apart. All of the albatrosses are apart from their mates for the vast majority of the year, and they only come back together in the breeding season. But they are faithful to their pair, and it doesn't seem to make any difference whether it's a same-sex relationship or not. Of course, they can't lay fertile eggs that way, but with this translocation, they can raise a chick just the same as the male-female pairs.
Two adult looking out for them, caring for them, getting food for them, and so on. So where is Kaloma now?
Nobody knows. They're not tagged. She took off, and it's just an amazing story how they do disappear from the Kauai, from their natal nests, their natal areas, and they, having been brought up to know that area as home, suddenly they feel the trade winds underneath them. They turn into the wind and they take off. Alaska. It's just mind-blowing, really, to think about it, because they've never fed themselves. They have never properly flown themselves.
Yes.
They fledge at 6 months and then they just take off.
That also has a parallel in the Godwits story, because I think the Batel Godwits leave New Zealand and they stop in Korea for a kind of a fuel stop, and then they go on to Siberia and or parts mm-hmm. of Alaska, and then they mate there and they have chicks, and the chick follow their parents back to New Zealand. So these tiny little juveniles going all that distance, it really is astounding. It's almost unbelievable.
It is. If we didn't know it happened,
no,
we wouldn't
believe
they could do it.
Mm. So we don't know if Callum is still alive?
No, we don't. We're going to have to wait for a couple of years. She will come back to Kauai if she's still alive in a couple of years. And then when she's about, I think it is about seven, she will start to find a mate and breed.
Has there been a high mortality rate on the birds that have been observed in these studies?
Not that I have seen, no. All the featured chicks, because the webcam covers a certain area, and so you can see some chicks move into the camera area. And it was focused on Kalama, and all of the chicks that they featured fledged safely. But what has happened since, of course, we're not going to know. They've been ringed, so we will know when they come back, and then we'll know who they are. The proof will be there, but we have to wait for it.
They're ground nesting birds, but most of the time they're over the ocean, of course, and and there are many dangers there for them as well now, aren't there?
Yeah. Basically, of course, as you won't be surprised to know, human activity.
Yes.
If we go back to the early 1900s, they were slaughtered for their feathers, and albatrosses, of course, were not the only birds that were slaughtered for their feathers. Egrets were too, to make women's hats, but once that was stopped, they were later caught in drift nets. Now, drift nets are mainly banned nowadays. I think any that exists still are illegal. But unfortunately, we've now got two new dangers: longline fisheries, which catch albatrosses at a rate of 100,000 a year, which again is just amazingly appalling, and plastic, ubiquitous,
yes,
everywhere. Not only affecting albatrosses, but affecting fishes, turtles and all seabirds.
Look, Marion, we've only got about 7 minutes left, so let's talk a little bit now about the Californian condor, which I think is critically endangered.
In 1987, the last wild bird was taken into captivity to join 26. Mm. So in 1987, there were only 27 live California condors in the southwest of the United States and from Mexico.
Mm.
So they established a captive breeding program in Southern California. It's called the California Condor Recovery Program, led by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, with many, many partners, including the states of California, Arizona, and Utah, which are the basic home of the California condor in the United States, although the federal government of Mexico is also involved. So the goal is to establish two geographically distinct populations, each with 150 birds in the wild, and hopefully at least 15 breeding pairs. And there are three active release sites now in California, one in Arizona, one in Baja California, which is in Mexico, and I think there'll be a new one starting up on the border with Oregon.
Condors are scavengers, aren't they? They're vultures.
Yeah.
So what else can you quickly tell us about condors?
I think we've all seen the vultures in Africa and India, and the California condor is more brightly coloured, with a very bright yellowish red orange neck and head, which flushes more in the breeding season. The young, which we're watching one at the moment, is grey and a lot duller. There again, they're slow breeders, which contributes to the fact that there are so few of them. They only become sexually mature at age 6, but they can live till they're 60. Mm. But they only breed in alternate years. What happens is, these are chicks who are looked after by their parents for a long time. The current chick in the Cornell Lab site at Los Padres National Forest in California will be looked after by her parents for another year.
Right.
So they won't be breeding for that year.
Right.
Sorry, you did mention that they were scavengers.
Yes.
extremely important cleaners. They're consuming dead creatures, domesticated and wild, mammalian and aquatic. They've even been known to eat whales on the coast.
Eat whales, did you say?
Whales, yeah. California condors have no sense of smell, but they have excellent eyesight, soaring up to a height of 1,500 feet. And they're, again, like albatrosses, they are big foragers. They go a long distance, maybe 160 miles a day, to bring food for the chick.
Well, that was a bit of the osprey song, performed by the juniors at Hurst Lodge School. So tell us about the osprey study that you followed, Marion.
Well, ospreys, unlike albatrosses and condors, are very numerous. They don't exist in New Zealand. They do exist in pretty well every other part of the world, except for Antarctica. Here in Britain, we've got many osprey projects, in that there are cameras on many nests in Scotland, some in Wales, but few in England. And you might be interested to know that the translocation operation now just started this year to try to re-establish ospreys in England, where they should be, but were persecuted. The old story. So down on the south coast at Poole Harbour, they have translocated 8 young 6-week-old ospreys who are old enough to eat by themselves, and they're fed just as one might feed a cat or a dog. And they were in big pens, and they have just been released, and one at least has migrated. So this is an important area for them, because ospreys pass through Poole, south of England, on migration from Scotland. They should be there by nature, and we're hoping that there's going to be a good population in the south of England.
How is it that, as a successful species, their numbers decline so?
Well, originally hunting and egg collecting, they seem to be a popular, the egg seems to be a popular one to collect. Mm. But later in the 50s and 60s, pesticides such as DDT, which is now thankfully banned, caused their eggshells to become fragile, and they just were not viable. Mm. So they were pretty well wiped out in England.
It's been quite a few years now that you've been watching the progress of these species. So you've seen many chicks succeed, but there have been some sad tales as well.
There have. This year there were a couple of sad stories. In Montana, in the United States, 4 eggs were produced in the nest by the university there. One died from hypothermia in the night, and the others went hungry because the river, the Clark River, by which the nest is constructed, was so high and so turbid that the male osprey, Louis, couldn't catch any fishes for 2 days. Now, adults can survive 2 days without food, but the chicks died.
Mm.
So that was a sad story. And at Loch Arkaig in the Scottish Highlands, in one nest, only one chick survived. But this little chick did well, even though his parents were first-time parents and they were a little bit clumsy with him and stood on him every now and again. he's called Lachlan.
Lachlan.
He's migrated safely.
Okay. Now, look, can our listeners watch the progress as well, or do you have to be enrolled or to be a sponsor?
No, you don't have to be. None of them, they're all free. It's just a matter of tracking them down. One leads to another. The Cornell University Lab, Bird Cam Lab, is a good point to start.
Okay.
And from there you find others. So if listeners wanted to go on the website and look for the Cornell Bird Lab, they will find any number of nest sites, not just of ospreys, but of all creatures, including the condor. That's another one in the Cornell lab.
Mm. Definitely. Oh, Marion, I'm just sorry we don't have any more time, because there's so much more that we could have said, but it would be nice to have you on again at some time in the future. Maybe we can fill in some more detail and have some updates. Thank you so much. Until we chat next time.
Thank you, Sandra, for the opportunity to talk about these wonderful creatures.
Oh, they are.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Nature certainly tells some wonderful stories, and in migration is definitely one of them. Now, thanks again to Marion. And if you'd like to follow the progress of birds and studies, as she said, head over to the Cornell University Bird Lab. And don't forget that we have similar bird studies here in New Zealand. And of course, the Goldwit project was quite groundbreaking just a few years ago, as I mentioned before. If you want to know more about the Goldwit or some of our own species, then Google that information. I'll put as many links as I can find on our Facebook page, together with some photos that you can look at in conjunction with the interview that you've just heard. We'll go out on a lovely instrumental version of El Condor Pasa, which means the condor passes, popularized by Simon and Garfunkel, but it was composed in 1913 by Peruvian composer Daniel Alomia Robles. So until next time, everyone, go well, Matiwa.